Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Basic Conversation. And Father Basic, it's good to be here with you, as always.
Good to be with you, Brad.
And we have a weighty topic today, and we're going to look at it as from the lens of our Pope Leo XIV,
yes.
His view or his perspective on artificial intelligence.
Yes, indeed. What has interested me in many ways is the positive response of the secular media to this encyclical official teaching.
That was focused just on artificial intelligence.
Yeah, well, I want to push back a bit on that, but it's long.
It is long.
I have heard that you read the whole thing.
Not the whole thing, I have to confess. I didn't get to the end, but it was a
you
great
didn't
read.
Get to the conclusion?
I did not, no.
Oh, well, that's...
You can fill us in. Yeah.
So, yeah, background on American influence on the church as a whole. And this helps us understand how Leo comes at this, Pope Leo XIV. So, back around 1890, a Canadian bishop wrote to Vatican, and the Pope was Pope Leo XIII. And he told him that this union, this labor union, Knights of Labor, it was like a communist organization. And Pope Leo was about ready to, he was about ready to condemn unions. And Cardinal, then Archbishop Gibbons of Baltimore and Archbishop Ireland of St. Paul wrote about a 50-page letter that Gibbons took to Pope Leo XIII, saying you can't condemn labor. The labor unions have been crucial to the Catholics and the church. So there's about 20 million Catholics who came to the United States between 1820 and 1920. And they were encountered a nativist prejudice, the Know-Nothing political party. And so that's important to keep in mind. Well, actually, they got to Pope Leo XIII. He changed his mind. He was very much against socialism and very much for private property, but he decided that he would support the labor union movement. Gibbons told him, if you don't do that, you're going to lose the Catholics in the United States for generations, because they were making it through the unions. Thomas Powderly was the head of the Knights of Labor, and the Catholics were very involved. And so the church became known for the immigrants here as the friend of the people. Church was the friend. So that's part of the background. I just thought of another background point I want to make about when Pope Leo XIV went to Villanova Augustinian School. He majored in math and science. I think that's important to keep in mind. So we've got this positive response from the secular media. What did the New York Times wrote? It was a powerful foray into the digital technology. I think it was USA Today said it was profound and prophetic. So that's really interesting just in itself. Now, when I read, I did read both. It took me a long time to read because I would run across things that I didn't know and names I didn't recognize and biblical allusions that I had to check. And so it took me a very long time to read it, and I did it in segments. It sounded more to me like a sermon than an academic treatise. It feels like a sermon to me. And in that sermon, the Pope is very taken with two biblical stories. One is the story of the Tower of Babel. That's in Genesis 11, 1-9. So the people, these are the descendants of Noah after the flood. Got that? Noah and the flood. His descendants were migrating around and got to a plain. And they said, we're going to build a tower to heaven, and as the scripture says, make a name for ourselves. And as the story goes, God was not pleased with them because they were arrogant and trying to do the other thing. So it's at that point that God, before that, everybody on the earth spoke the same language, according to the story in Genesis. And after that, all the languages were confused and people couldn't understand one another and so on. So that's the story of the Tower of Babel. And he refers to it periodically throughout the encyclical. And then the other story is the book of Nehemiah. And again, I had to go back and reread Nehemiah, which I might have read many years ago. And the story of Nehemiah is interesting because the Israelites were in captivity in Babylon from 587 to about 539. And then the pagan king Cyrus freed them and let them go back to Jerusalem. And he appointed Nehemiah, as the story goes, to be in charge of it. So what Nehemiah did when he got back there to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, which were destroyed, he decided on a different strategy. That is, he assigned to families or to various groups a segment of the wall to be rebuilt. And then each one, they learned to cooperate, they worked together. They got the job done. They were efficient, effective. And as the book says, in 52 days, they rebuilt all the walls of Jerusalem by cooperating, by working together. And so that becomes the metaphor for Pope Leo. We got to today treat AI intelligence not like Babel, but like Nehemiah. And rebuilding and getting people. So it's like he's inviting us into a conversation on how we can build a better society. It's interesting. He likes the building metaphor. I think he thinks of what's the church supposed to do? Try to build a civilization of love, build things up. It's sort of in his mindset that's what the church should be doing, building positive things and so on. So let me just say some of the things that struck me as I read it, hoping that some of it clicks in. I was struck by how erudite it is. I remember Bishop Barron saying that encyclical was written by a wise man, referring to Pope Leo XIV, and an expert in humanity. So, in other words, he talks, for example, about Beethoven's Ninth Symphony as being a call to unity, or Pablo Picasso's famous Guernica large painting as a great anti-war sentiment. He talks about women, importance of women in the church, and how they suffer doubly. Women in society and church, women often suffer doubly because they're outsiders and they don't have control of their own destiny. And they don't have the voice they need to protest it. He talks about women like Dorothy Day and Mother Teresa as great examples of women who do good in the world, who build a civilization of love and so on. He talks about Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela as people who work for racial justice and so on. So it's an interesting thing. Other things that struck me as I'm going along, he at one point says, just war theory, that's a word he used, the just war theory is no longer viable in today's world. So that, and without further explanation, I personally would like to push back against that.
Why did he say that? Because of the technology.
He said, yes, you're right. Because the weapons are so powerful and the nuclear threat is there, it no longer makes sense to talk about a just war.
And the drones are now making decisions on who to kill versus a human element to that.
Right.
Making those decisions.
Yeah. Anyway, I still think the just war tradition, not theory, it's not a theory, it's a tradition, has something to say to us, but that should be for another time.
That is a big, yes, we'll have to splinter off the whole topic in and of itself, right?
So what am I saying? Another time, very powerfully, end of chapter 4, he's talking about trafficking, human trafficking, and he said, in the name of the church, I want to ask forgiveness for any ways we have been complicit in trafficking. Powerful statement that I'm sure will get a lot of press. How are we doing so far?
You're doing great. Is there any element of the Catholic social teaching that leads into this?
Oh, great, Brad. That's a great lead in. Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Let's do it. So, I mean, the general idea is that he has is that we're in a crisis moment with AI. We're at a tipping point. And it's either going to go off in miserable directions and so on. But he believes that Catholic social doctrine is what he says. And I like that phrase. I always say Catholic social teaching, but he says Catholic social doctrine, which began with Rerum Novarum back in 1891, has produced certain themes and fundamental points that he likes to draw on. So he issued the encyclical on May 25th, which was an anniversary of the publication of Rerum Novarum on new things, which had the Catholic input of supporting labor unions and so on, often thought of as the beginning of Catholic social teaching. So he honors Rerum. It's probably a commonly thought it's one reason he chose the name Leo. And so Leo's thing was the Industrial Revolution had changed the world, and that it had displaced workers, it had produced child labor, and people were living in poverty, all those Catholic immigrants were having trouble making it. And Pope Leo comes up and says, the church is going to speak on this. So people say, well, the church has anything to do with labor laws or institutional reforms or anything. No, and Pope Leo said, no. The joys and concerns of the world are the joys and the concerns of the church. And that eventually got enshrined in the Second Vatican Council. So it was on the 135th anniversary of Rerum Novarum that Pope Leo very purposely publishes on that day to honor Pope Leo XIII. And what he said is that he dealt with the Industrial Revolution. And his great glory is that he said the Catholic Church has moral teaching that could help us deal with this. And right from the beginning of his pontificate, he said that he thought the major concern of our time was artificial intelligence. And so in a sense, he set up an expectation that he was going to do an encyclical. So the insiders, when it came out, were not surprised. He signaled it on his very first talk as being Pope, that he considered AI to be a major problem. And I think as we talk about AI, what was the subtitle of the...
It was a great subtitle. It said, encyclical letter from Pope Leo XIV on safeguarding the human person in the time of artificial...
Say it again with faith.
Safeguarding the human person in the time of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So put right at the beginning, it's about the human element of life.
Right, yeah. So his great contention is our current crisis, and he thinks we're in a crisis, we're in a tipping point, that we got to act now or it can be too late in dealing with artificial intelligence. I think if people are looking for an explanation of artificial intelligence, they ought to look somewhere else than in Pope Leo. I mean, he does say things about it, but there would be real experts on it that one might want to look at. But his point is that it's powerful. It's a raging crisis that's created. He has interesting ways of talking about that, where my language is the tipping point. I've got to decide now if we wait too long. And his great contention, of course, is that Catholic social doctrine can help us deal with it. That's the point of the whole thing.
How about if I give you the bullets and you pick out which one really resonates with you with the Catholic social doctrine? Let's see if these resonate. The principle of common good. The common good, we could spend a lot of time there, right?
Yeah. Let's go with that. So we're now on themes of Catholic social teaching, right? There's principles we follow. And essentially, what Leo does is take those themes, I'll use that in a broad sense, and use them to analyze the situation. So he thinks that the danger, so let's say with the first one, the common good, right? It was defined at one point in Catholic social teaching as the sum total of conditions that allow human beings and groups to flourish. Leo says that the common good is the social expression of the dignity of human persons. That's an interesting way of saying it. So the great danger is that we go off on our own and do our own thing, and that we have excessive partisanship in the United States. We see that as a great example of neglecting the common good of... And he thinks that, you know, the great danger is selfishness. The great danger is acting like Babel, and I want to make a name for myself. I want to make a lot of money. I want to have a great reputation and neglect the fact that that's all a gift from God, and that there's ways we should pay back. I've been proud of some of the students I taught over the years who have... appreciated their education and used that idea of payback, who want to pay back, who want to give and do and help others and so on. So the common good. And the Pope says clearly the role has a government. The government has a role in this. The state has a role. The state should provide conditions so that the common good can flourish. The government should make laws that help this, and that there's a common good that our United States could have, a good so that we could create a society that's more equitable and more just and so on. And the legislature should do that if they can. But then it also applies this to the international order. So what we've got to do is get nations in the world to think in terms of how we can promote the good of the whole world and not just their own self-interest. And he gives a body, you know, nations have a right to protect their borders. Nations have a right to their own indigenous forms of culture and education and so on. And he acknowledges that. But we can support the common good without losing identity. And I think that's an important part of this as he sees it. So Catholic social teaching is I think, good at that. We can try to serve. In fact, in serving others, one will find fulfillment. It's like Pope John Paul II said, we are not just neighbors on this planet. We are not just neighbors in the United States. we are responsible for one another, not just neighbors, but actors, to try to do good. And so part of what Pope Leo wants us to think in that way and to do that way. I think, is that enough?
I think that is, yes. And we have other bullet items under Catholic social teachings, but you want to pivot more into what?
Yeah, well, let's...
The AI recommendations, maybe?
No, I don't want to.
Not to do that, okay.
I know where I want to go.
All right, take it.
I want to go to the next idea, theme. Universal destination of goods, is that one?
Yes.
In your list?
It's on my list, yes.
Go ahead, tell me all your list, and we'll see.
Universal destination of goods, the principle of subsidiarity.
Subsidiarity and order and solidarity.
Solidarity, and the last one is social justice.
Yeah, let's take them one at a time.
Universal destination of goods.
Yeah, so that Pope Leo's emphasizing that God gave the goods of the earth for all people. No, and that we all share in that, and we need to try to make sure there's an equitable sharing of goods, and that nobody's excluded. And so, you know, you say to have rich countries have all the power and resources and everything, and poor countries have nothing, that's not right. And so we need to remember that the resources of this world are meant for all people to share equitably and so on. Universal destination of goods. And the goods would be not just material, but cultural goods and social goods and so on. Yeah. Next one.
Subsidiarity,
yeah. That's the contribution of Pope Pius XI. So after Leo XIII started Catholic social teaching, each succeeding pope added to it in some way. Like Pope Francis added to it in terms of caring for the environment. Well, Pope Pius XI added this notion of subsidiarity. What he meant by that is that decisions should be made at a local level as much as possible. No, so your work in a school board, schools should have, I take a certain autonomy in what they do, jumping into your field there, sorry. But you could apply that, couldn't you, to your field?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that at a local level, and that what he, this is really important in what Leo is thinking. We don't want the church to just be in a position where AI develops and technology gets better and more and rapidly increases and so on, and then we sit back and say, well, we don't like this. No. He says we have to be in the ball game at the beginning, have to be part of the process to start with. We want to be players right away now before it's out of hand. And I think given the crisis we're in and the raging pace of technology, as Leo says, raging pace. We want to be players now before it's too late. Yeah. Is that clear?
It is. Yeah. Solidarity.
Solidarity. John Paul II really emphasized that, and he made it a virtue. He said solidarity is a virtue. And Leo definitely picks up on that. It's a virtue which inclines us to work together, to share common interests, to sacrifice our own ideology to finding common ways of speaking and so on. So it's important that we use good language. I go back to what he said about women in his encyclical, too often they're excluded, and too often they're don't have the resources in various ways to defend themselves. So solidarity is a virtue that is rooted in the fundamental idea we're all made in the image and likeness of God. So we all have an equal rights to the goods of the earth. We all have essential human dignity, and we need to call on that in working together. We need more solidarity in the world. Yeah.
And the last one is social justice.
Yeah. Social justice, very important. So these are, you've enumerated five themes from traditional Catholic social teaching that's been developed over 135 years since Leo, and that Pope Leo XIV draws on to make his points. The last one, justice. He well understands that injustice can embed it in systems. There's such a thing as social injustice. There's such a thing as systems that are against dignity. It become part of our ordinary way of thinking of things. Well, it's just right for 1% of Americans to have this much wealth, and while large numbers of them don't have anything. It gets embedded in systems. And the problem is it creates false consciousness. False consciousness means we don't notice it. You know, we don't notice that a large percentage of Americans are living below the poverty line in the richest country in the world. You know, how can that be? And we don't think about it. Well, it's just how it is. And a whole lot of what Leo wants is to make sure we call attention to that sort of thing so that we don't take it for granted. Social sin, we have to try to fight against that. And that takes a lot of work. I mean, to my students, I often talked about when we were talking about the death penalty. And I would say, someday, people your age are going to come on in college and they're going to say, well, you know, they used to put people in an electric chair and kill them. And those students say, oh, no, they never did that. I can't believe it. What do you mean? They killed, put people in an electric chair? They didn't. You're making that up. It's how it becomes part of our consciousness. Yeah. I know where I want to go.
You did a really nice recap of how Pope Leo framed things, the road up to his framework and the cautions and proper use of AI.
Yeah. I mean, the fun, he keeps over and over in the, and so he keeps insisting that Catholic social teaching could help us, can help us avoid mistakes and so on. So you didn't read the conclusion, but I did.
I'd love to hear about it. I know some of the recommendations.
There's a whole section in the conclusion of this magnificent thing. Incidentally, in terms of the title, the way people talk about it, very often it's referred to in terms of the English translation of the Latin title. And Magnificans Humanitas, the Latin, magnificent humanity. But I notice when people, commentators talk about it, say magnificent humanity, and people are recognizing that that's what we're talking about. So in the conclusion, he says, there's let us do this and that. You got to help me, Brad.
Well, he gave a bunch of recommendations, like keep human beings in control.
Yeah, that's not what I'm thinking about.
That's not what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
How about this? How about the other ones where the use of AI for lethal force should be outlawed? Life and death decisions should never be left out.
Okay, you want to get those in? Go ahead.
Yes, I would, yes. How about AI should not concentrate power in the hands of tech giants?
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing in Congress today. There's a lot of talk about that, you know.
Protect kids, truth, and education.
Yeah, truth. That's let me highlight that one. Let us work to preserve truth. I'm back to getting back to where I want to be with the conclusions. Let us protect, let us work for the truth. Think of Hannah Arendt, the great Jewish philosopher, who said that in when dictators take over, first thing to go is factual truth. People talk about alternative facts. Hannah Arendt says you can't have that. You know, we have to save the truth, we have to work for truth. We all have to do that in our own way. We have to let us together work for truth. That's always bringing it together at the end. This isn't just me. It's not just my encyclical. It's we all have our own role to play. It might be small, little things. How do we stand up for truth? Someone might say, teaching their children, you know, we have allegiance to God before we have any allegiance to a political leader. The truth is that God loves us and cares for us. The truth is that Jesus Christ saved all of us. There are no second-class citizens in the church. That's the truth. And he also has let us together educate ourselves. We have to keep learning. Have to keep learning how AI works, how these platforms can make kids addicted. He does say at times that he recognizes the need to control the use of cell phones for our young people.
He had a whole section on there about the role of schools, K-12 and university. Some of the same things you just mentioned, yeah. How do you utilize?
All the way along the line, we're educating ourselves, and we got to do a better job in the schools of alerting kids to the addictive character. We got to keep kids away from the phones so much, maybe out of the schools and all of that. So, yeah.
I got a couple more here for you. How about this one? Human dignity should be valued over efficiency.
Yes, that's important in general. So he talks about the technological paradigm that can take us over. So part of seeking the truth about life is that the technological paradigm is destructive. It produces addictions and so on. So again, to be more even-handed, he recognized AI can do a lot of good things, but he says AI, the people, AI, artificial intelligence, cannot know love, cannot know a sense of responsibility, can talk about intimacy and even make sound like they're creating intimacy, but they don't know what they speak. They can't, they don't know what love is. They don't know what responsibility is. They can't function humanly. Human beings do that, and human beings are special. Let me get to a last one for me, and then let us pray together. Something he wants us to do to deal with this problem, because we are at a tipping point, we are at a crisis. It's going at a fast pace, and we have to pray. A lot of times people say, we'll pray for one another. That's all I can do. And sometimes I say, well, that's a lot. People tell them they're praying for me. I said, that's all I can do. I can't help you. I'm praying for you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate prayers. So on. And so he raises up at the very end, Mary, the mother of Jesus, Mary, our sister, and her great Magnificat, prayer that Luke puts on her lips. And it's all stuff that's been accomplished. God has scattered the proud. God has thrown down the mighty, and God has lifted up the lowly. Magnificat have been, and so that becomes, you know, a way of bringing together. We're going to all pray that we find our ways to support the good things in AI, and to deny the bad things, and to in our Catholic Church, I think we should be proud of our Catholic social teaching. There's good stuff in there that we've mentioned as we've gone along. It's good stuff. It's a moral break on AI. It's gives a broad vision of how we can try to control it. It gives us a motivation for making progress. And finally, it gives us hope. Hope that we can make progress and we can move forward and we can turn this great AI movement to the positive things for the human family. Let us all join in prayer for that.
Amen.